Shop Woodhouse Ford first and experience the difference today. Our sales staff is here to make sure you find your perfect car, truck, or SUV. Visit one of our three convenient locations in Blair, Omaha, or Plattsmouth, or shop online at woodhouse.com. Woodhouse Ford. Build Ford proud.
All right, last hour of the week. Here we go, as we always do, with Dirk Chatelain from the World Herald. Stuff that's being discussed this week seems like it was the same stuff that was being discussed back in August when the Big Ten was going to play and then wasn't going to play. Am I wrong?
You know, it's like I wrote the other day, like, what are the freaking odds that Nebraska would be the first team in this position? Like, are you kidding me? And that's not a, you know, looking at it from the lens, you know, looking at the world through Nebraska's woe is me lens. I mean, that's just like, there was literally a 1 in 14 shot that Nebraska would be the first school in this position. And, no, it's the same thing. And this is how real world disputes work. You know, it's like you have a, whether it's your wife or a friend or your boss or a teacher or whatever, like you just, a parent, you have this thing that's beneath the surface and you have a flare up and then it gets under control for a while and then something brings it back and it's just, it's never quite resolved. And, you know, it's really frustrating from one perspective because I feel like Nebraska, especially in this case, didn't do anything that I thought was out of bounds at all. I mean, you know, who cares? You called Chattanooga and discussed the possibility of playing before you went to the Big Ten and tried to get it signed off. I don't have any problem with that. I don't know why anybody else should have a problem with that either. But it is, you know, it's just amazing how, like you just said, I mean, this is basically the same argument, you know, 2.5 months apart.
Yeah, and it's the same old, and, you know, I mean, there's people that are their peers of yours that, you know, guys that we've interviewed that we have some respect for that just, they've gone down that road again. But it doesn't it show you a little bit? And it's amazing the power of the Nebraska brand. It's a program that's 9-16 in the last 25, but still gets talked about nationally. You know, not necessarily for what you've done on the field. It's more off the field. But there's still people talk about it. They write about it, and they get a reaction. I guess at 9-16 in the last 25, what it'll be like when the next 25 are much better on the field.
Yeah, I think it's there's a few reasons for that. I mean, one is this is sort of the one of the 5 or 7 sort of flagship programs of a lot of these guys' childhood, and you know they're sort of the years when they were probably most passionate about college football. So, I mean, I think you tend to gravitate toward the programs that were influential when you were growing up or really, you know, fascinated by college football. That's probably part of it. But, you know, I just feel like there's been a little bit of a disconnect between, I have a lot of respect for a lot of these guys, but it doesn't seem to me that they're even trying to understand the situation. Mm-hmm. And by the way, I would exempt Dan Wetzel from that. I mean, there's certain guys, you know, who I think are more careful about what they say and write and try to do it in a more diplomatic way. But yeah, it's sort of veered off track, I think, with some of these guys. I mean, Paul Feinbaum, his comments this morning that, you know, we're just wrong. I mean, they're just factually inaccurate. And I think that's really frustrating, not only as a Nebraskan, but also as a journalist, because I think that type of stuff sort of paints everybody with a broad brush next time something like this comes up. So, but, you know, I think sometimes, you know, you mentioned that Nebraska will be more influential when they get back on track, and that might be true. But I think, like a lot of things in our culture, we're sort of fascinated by the people who are doing really, really well, and we're fascinated by the people who are doing very, very poorly. in the middle ground is kind of boring. And I think, you know, a lot of people watch college football today. I would include myself in this. And you're almost watching it to be entertained by the struggling programs that aren't supposed to struggle. I mean, you know, when I tuned into Oklahoma, Texas a month ago, it was because I wanted to see, you know, who was going to be most miserable at the end of the day. You know, people love to laugh at Florida State's problems and, you know, Miami when they had problems at Notre Dame. And so I think there's just sort of a glee that with some of these old, you know, sort of the most prestigious and famous programs in college football, when they are struggling or failing, it gets a lot of attention. And we'll get less attention, I think, when Nebraska becomes a little bit more, you know, a little bit better of a football team, but probably less entertaining in other ways.
This was inevitable. I mean, we got a pandemic that is raging in this country, and it's hitting the Midwest hard. So this was inevitable, and we knew this when the schedule was put together that you're going to try and play 8-8 or 9-9. How would you judge the Big Ten's communication of what has gone on this week with Wisconsin reading what was put forth by the Big Ten, that the decision was in their hands, but the Big Ten really not saying anything publicly about the first canceled game?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know why they continue to do this crap. I mean, there's a lack of transparency and just responsibility, I feel like, that they just continue to make the same mistakes. And I don't, you know, I wasn't as fired up this week about a double standard or whether Wisconsin, you know, had met the threshold to cancel and all that. I mean, I generally empathize with programs who are in this position, and I feel like, you know, if they determine that they are not in a position to play a football game, we should trust that they're telling the truth. Mm-hmm. But having said that, you know, the Big Ten, it's their rules, it's their policies, it's their culture that they set, and, you know, they really need to be more assertive, I think, in how they handle these situations, especially, like you just said, because this is going to come up again and again and again. And, you know, we've had this conversation at 1 o'clock on Fridays a couple different times, yeah. But my biggest concern with the season is just that you're going to compromise the legitimacy of it, the integrity of it, which makes us all look back in 2 months and perhaps say, you know, why did we do that at all? Mm-hmm. And I think partly because of the regulations and the standards that the Big Ten has signed up for, partly because, you know, the virus is just booming across the Great Lakes and the upper Midwest. But I think this conference is really in a tough spot right now if it hopes to maintain the legitimacy of a season. And that's a big concern. I mean, are you really going to play what people, you know, consider a legitimate or serious football season, and you might have a team that's a top 25 team only play, you know, 4, 5, 6 games? I mean, that's really, I don't know. I don't know what the word is. It's embarrassment is probably too far, but it's really an issue that, again, I think goes back to the flexibility in the schedule. It goes back to the leadership back in August. They've just sort of put themselves back against the wall right now, where this could really get out of control.
So this is, again, a conversation we probably had back in August. Nebraska is raising some issues that I think are issues in the league. It's just Nebraska is the loudest. And, you know, with the previous regime at Nebraska, you went along with the Big Ten. This regime thinks first and foremost about what is best for Nebraska. Is there a way to get through all of this? I mean, when things settle down, and you make it through winter sports, you make it through spring sports, you've got an off season, and hopefully you can start to generate some revenue and things get back to a little sense of normalcy in this country, that the Big Ten comes together. I mean, where would you start in trying to fix this league and get it on the right direction, and where the Big Ten Conference should be?
You know, I don't know if I have enough insight into that to have the answer. I think a lot of this is just sort of an old way of doing things where the conference is prioritizes, you know, uniformity and cohesion, and everybody is on the same page, supposedly, at the expense of the benefit of the individual school.
Mm-hmm.
They like order. They don't like a school standing up and saying, wait, why are we doing this again? And that's essentially what Nebraska has done and what, you know, Ohio State did. And it's come up in a few other instances over the last 10 years that Nebraska's been in the league. But, it's primarily, I think, a school like Nebraska, which has always been independent-minded, looks at a situation and says, you know, the conference is supposed to be working to the benefit of the school as opposed to the schools working to the benefit of the conference. And I don't know how you remedy that. I think, you know, some of that goes back 100 years, 50 mm-hmm. years at least. And, you know, I think Nebraska just has a hard time swallowing its pride. I mean, we've either been that kid or we've known that kid or we have that kid in our family who just has a hard time, you know, just putting your head down and moving on from a conflict or a situation that mm-hmm. that doesn't seem right. And Nebraska, you know, I would argue that it's a virtue of Nebraska's most of the time. Others would obviously argue that it's a weakness of Nebraska's, but Nebraska doesn't necessarily just put its head down and go along. And I think a lot of that goes back to the Big 12 days when Nebraska felt like it got burned multiple times. But it just doesn't look like a great fit. And I think, again, some of this is just pure coincidence that Nebraska's in this situation. Nebraska didn't have to be the first school to be looking for a game because their opponent had a COVID outbreak. That was just pure bad luck or coincidence. Just as, you know, 11 years ago, Nebraska didn't necessarily have to be on the opposing sideline when the officials put 1 second back on the clock in Dallas. It's just sometimes these things are coincidental, and Nebraska, I feel like, has been in these situations where a little bit of a rift has been exposed or exploited because, you know, it was just a bad situation. And that's kind of where I think it is right now, and I don't know how you put that back together. I think time is, you know, time would help. Success would help. Winning a division title or two would certainly help. But there are clearly some philosophical differences here that are not easy to sort out.
No, and it's not going to change overnight. And it'll take even some time with some winning. Let's do talk about something the game last Saturday against Ohio State. How long did it take you before, just with the eyeballs watching that game, they're like, okay, they're better. Not a finished product by any means, but better than the last time they were on the field.
First of all, wait a second. That was only 5 days ago? Are you serious?
I know.
It was about a month ago. I think the first drive is the first drive. And, you know, even great teams can have a rough first drive. Bad teams can have, you know, a great first drive. It's sort of fluky sometimes. But I think, you know, it wasn't necessarily the first touchdown that Nebraska scored. It was early, mid-second quarter when not only was Nebraska's offense, you know, moving the ball, but they were making Ohio State work. They were especially holding up at the line of scrimmage, which in these games over the years has been a huge, glaring, flashing light weakness for Nebraska, that they get punished at the line of scrimmage against programs like Ohio State. So I think when I looked at the game in the second quarter and Nebraska was holding up on third and short, you know, forcing short yardage situations for Ohio State, forcing fourth downs, that was like kind of a whoa moment. You know, it was like, wow, Nebraska is finally looks like a capable Big Ten team at the line of scrimmage. And I think, you know, they still, we don't need to get into all the weaknesses, but, you know, I think Nebraska is still very vulnerable at certain positions on the field. But I think, you know, by the middle of the second quarter, basically, when it started to fall apart, I thought Nebraska looked like a legitimate top 25 team. And, you know, and then as often happens with teams that lack confidence, it tends to fall apart fairly quickly. And it did with basically one bad offensive drive, and then Ohio State, before you knew it, it was 38-14. But I took a lot of encouragement, you know, from the first 25 minutes of that game.
Hey, we'll finish on this, and I appreciate your perspective across the board, not just sports, but you can tie sports and what's going on in our country together. The next time that we talk, we will have gone through an election day. What's your feelings on, and this is the first time, I think, Dirk, in my lifetime, that we have seen, first of all, more people voting for the first time, but the athlete, whether they be professional or college athlete, has gotten so involved in getting the word out to vote, to register, or for the first time they are voting. Have you ever seen anything like this from the sports world?
No, not even close. I mean, I was a child of the 1980s and 90s when athletes very, very, very rarely, you know, said anything politically. And I think that was probably a little bit of a backlash to the 50s and 60s, I guess. So no, this is new to me. I think, you know, part of it is a result of the polarization in our culture. Part of it is athletes being empowered through social media and other means. I think in most ways it's good. You know, I think athletes have, you know, deserve to be heard in the same way that everybody else is heard, and I think they will continue to take advantage of that, even college athletes. But I'm sure there's a drawback to this stuff too. And once politics creeps into the sports world, it's probably going to, it's always been there, but once it becomes more, you know, prominent, I think there are going to be some drawbacks to that. And, I don't know if we can envision those drawbacks or the extent of them yet. I mean, I think there's going to be, the NBA will probably, for instance, continue to creep. Creep is probably not the right word, but to evolve into a more urban liberal game all the time. I think, you know, it'll be interesting to see what that does to their business, what that does to their ratings, what that does to, you know, their standing in Red America, for instance. I think there are other sports, you know, that are probably the opposite of that, but that's just one example. So, you know, in 50 years from now, we might have sports that are overwhelmingly, you know, liberal, and sports that are overwhelmingly, you know, conservative. And you might look at the NBA or soccer or NASCAR or golf and say, hey, that already exists, buddy. But I think it may be more prominent a couple decades from now.
There's another thing that will be, you know, we're kind of hearing on Tuesday, the NCAA has made it a day off, you know, so that students can go vote. And some programs are taking their entire team to go vote, or they have already voted by mail. There are some coaches, and you know, because football coaches can be control freaks, and Tuesday is an important day of the preparation week, that are not happy that the NCAA across the board made that a day of no activity, instead go vote.
Yeah, Dabo might have a hard time adjusting to that world.
I think he's one that kind of questioned that, and I think Dan Mullen got involved as well about, you know what, it kind of messes with our preparation. Well, you got to read the room.
Well, I think that one thing that I hope comes out of this is, I mean, first of all, participation. The percentage of people who don't vote in America, who are eligible to vote in certain elections over the years, has been almost embarrassing. So I think it's really good that you're seeing the participation that, you know, that you're seeing, especially at youth, in the youth level. But I think it's going to be interesting how this evolves, not just from participation, but to activism, and how how coaches and schools handle the activism part of it.
Yep.
Because at this point, there's still sort of a kumbaya, everybody come together and, you know, we're gonna raise our voter registration and participation and all that. But again, as this sort of organically develops into more activism, I think schools and head coaches are gonna have some situations that are pretty awkward. And some of that's just gonna be political disagreement. Some of it's going to be, you know, a player wants to do something to demonstrate a political view that a coach or a school does not endorse. You know, we've seen some of that already. Even at Nebraska, we've seen that. Mm-hmm. So I think that'll be really interesting to see how coaches handle that. To this point, I think they've been fairly accepting. But I do think that the athlete's role will become more prominent through time. And that's going to be a little bit of a tug of war, I think, with schools and the coaches that they're dealing with.
Yeah, and especially when it'll coincide when we flip the calendar to 21 and the name, image, likeness, the one-time transfer, all of that stuff comes together for a student athlete.
No doubt. The name, image, likeness, I mean, can you imagine an NIL issue where an athlete wants to, you know, represent a certain political cause that,
ooh, great point,
and have the school name on the front of the jersey at the same time. I mean, there will be some battles over that type of stuff. And even if those battles just occur on social media, you know, I think it's almost hard to comprehend what might, you know, the possibility, because they really are economic vehicles, social vehicles, the athletes themselves, agents, I guess, agents of change. They're marketers, they're very influential, and in some ways they're somewhat vulnerable to people taking advantage of them. So mm-hmm. I think, you know, all this stuff I think is generally positive, and I don't want to dismiss the positive part of it, because I think, you know, this is all generally moving in the right direction, but there's going to be some serious hiccups along the way.
Dirk, I appreciate it. Good stuff this week. You got back into some more sports writing. I like that.
All right, take care.
That's Dirk Challen from the World Herald. So Dabo Swinney earlier this month, when he was asked about what is going to happen on Tuesday, because the NCAA, the idea started at Georgia Tech. Georgia Tech was the first that decided to make an official policy for their student athletes in Atlanta that they would have Election Day off so that they could go vote. And then the NCAA shortly thereafter said, let's make this across the board. Well, this year in particular, you've got college football going on, and Tuesday is an important day for preparation. And Dabo Swinney earlier this month, when asked about it, he said, quote, I don't really understand the day off thing. He wasn't happy having to move things around. Clemson plays Notre Dame. Scott Satterfield at Louisville said the day off is not going to help his players vote since nearly all of them have already done it. And his quote was, I understand the premise in the NCAA saying we're going to focus on that. I get it, but our guys have already handled their business with it. It's a lot of college football coaches on a Tuesday that they are not allowed to do anything, or at least that's what the NCAA says. 128. George is going to chime in with an NBA minute.
Absolutely.
He is not only Mr. College Football Guy. last 30 minutes are right around the corner on the Gary Sharp Show on 1620 The Zone.